Welcome to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. We're two best friends cavorting, hanging out on the
cavorting.
Yeah, can we cavort? Can you cavort virtually?
Oh my goodness, cavorting and carousing.
We're convalescing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think these things we're saying that we do, we don't really do. We primarily talk. A secondary thing we do on the program is record.
We talk and record. So he's Mike, I'm Clayton. We gather up every week to talk about pop culture, music, coffee, etc. Whatever's on our minds this week. So you sort of had a vacation weekend, I guess, this weekend. No shows this weekend?
It is, and I'm glad. I'm glad to have had a little time off. The schedule, actually, for Chikara is a little more relaxed here in the summer. It just worked out that way, which is good, because we all need time to heal up from nagging injuries, and I really have not fully recovered from this wrist injury of mine. And I've really started to... This makes me sound older than I am, but, like, I've started to really, like, come to understand, as if I was... about half a year ago, I was informed during this ongoing thing with my left wrist. I was informed that I have terrible arthritis in both of my arms, through my left and right, from my hands all the way up through my arms. And I didn't really have an understanding of that, because to me, arthritis is something that happens to old people, Clayton.
Right, people who knit a lot. Like, I always picture, like,
knitters,
these sort of fingers sort of wrapped around needles and doing a lot of knitting. Those are people that have arthritis, right? Or at least that's what I always saw in the commercials, right? It was like an old woman who was rubbing her hand.
They're promoting arthritis in commercials. So
yeah, because you don't have enough arthritis, and that's the thing. You need more arthritis in the world, so that's why they had these commercials for it. So now you've got arthritis, and you said you didn't feel like you understood what that pain was like until just the other day.
Right, yeah, I've really started to understand it, and I was told this is very foreboding. The hand specialist at Jefferson, who gave me the once-over, had said to me in a very foreboding way, he said, if you don't understand what arthritic pain is yet, and at the time, you know, I didn't know, I just figured whatever the heck hurts here in my arm is like an injury, you know, I didn't imagine it to be arthritis. He said, if you don't understand it yet, before this calendar year is out, you will. And I thought, oh, that's kind of a gloomy forecast you're giving me there, you know? But he was right. He was right.
Yeah, it's not even a half year mark yet, and you figured that out.
Right, yeah. So, oh, boy, this is unpleasant.
So are you able to relax? You got, you know, no show weekend. I read an article last night in the Sunday New York Times, and it was an interesting piece about how feeling busy. And as a society, we've come to... I don't know. Did I share that article with you last night? I don't know. I thought you might
have. No, but, you know, I do feel busy sometimes, Clayton. So go on.
So it was... I'll share it with you. I'll tweet it out from the Grizzly Bear Cafe Twitter account. But I thought it was fascinating. And because the author, I guess, it sort of wrote this piece as a sort of an excerpt from a larger book that this person is writing on just sort of culture and how we feel the need to act busy. Mm-hmm. Even when we're not. I mean, so we feel anxiety when we're not doing busy work. Mm-hmm. And I feel this way. I'm sure you do too, right? Like, if there's downtime, you know, I may want to... Why shouldn't we just sit down on the couch and just sit back with a book? But mm-hmm. in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, you know, I just don't have time for that. I've got all these things I think I need to do, and mm-hmm. I just can't get them done. You know, I just feel like I just need to constantly be doing things. But at the end of the day, where does it get you, you know?
Mm-hmm. It gets you busy. That's what you're trying to be. You're trying to be busy.
But even when you're not busy, and you know there's nothing you really need to be doing, then, you know, you should be doing... You should just be relaxing, but you're not, you know?
I should be. Well, I'm so glad that you finally come out and said this.
Right. You should be relaxing.
I should be relaxing.
You should be carving out time to relax. Like, even on a... So you have this weekend where you have no shows. Like, you should have just relaxed. But I know you, because you're like me. You didn't. Mm-hmm. Right? You didn't. You found busy work, right?
Well, I wouldn't think of it as busy work. But I will tell you this. Like, there is a certain comfort zone that I enjoy. Like, I like to work a certain amount ahead of everything. And I've, over the years, built up a buffer zone for myself. You know what I mean? Like, maybe to relate this to, like, I remember my days working in a cubicle job. Like, I would work about a day ahead of where I should be. You know, like if I could get some things done for tomorrow that made tomorrow simpler, I would do that before I left the office for the day because that was just my workflow.
Right.
And similarly, you know, I have that my life now, even though I no longer work in a cubicle, I still have a workflow like that. Like I like to work a certain amount ahead. And the flip side is, and you know how this is now, because our, you know, our lives have really changed these last couple of years, right? With children, everything else that's going on in our lives, we have very busy adult lives, and there's no going back to the Woomba.
Right.
I don't know if you knew that.
You can buy a Roomba, which will clean clean your floor. It's not quite the same thing. It's a little loud.
And I have gone to Zumba, but I'm terrible at it.
have you really gone to a Zumba class, by the way?
They kicked me out. They're like, "You are so white. Get out.
You can't do hip-hop dance and exercise."
Right. That's what they said to me. They said, "What do you mean I'm so white?" And then they kicked dirt in my eye. Maybe it was sand. I don't know. And then I cut out the back of a comic book and sent it off to Charles Atlas to teach me how to be the hero of the beach. So if you know that reference was dated, wait till we get to the Hostess Pie reference later.
Yeah.
Because random things come up, right? Let's just say random thing, like one of our kids would have an ear infection and the whole day is rent asunder by this or whatever. When you build up that buffer zone, you can every once and again lose a day like that and your whole world isn't all screwed up, you know? So you need that buffer zone because every once and again you're going to want that. You know, you're going to need a day like that. Like, today is the day where nothing really happens and I'm not up against a deadline or something like that. But over time, I kind of watched as a lot of my buffer zone got whittled away, and that wears on me. So when I have an opportunity like this weekend where I'm not traveling, you know, which can be very time intensive, right? You spend 9 hours in a car to get somewhere, you spend all day there, and you come back 9 hours the next day. A lot of time is lost. To rebuild that buffer zone for myself is actually quite relaxing because now I know I've bought myself time in case something like that were to come up again. You know, if for whatever day or for whatever reason, I should say, a day needs to be kind of sacrificed for that, then that's okay. And I'm not going to be like, oh, my God, I got to get everything done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, it's funny when you think about, like, workflows and things like that. I was listening to the Mac Power Users podcast this week, and they had, as a guest, Merlin Mann, a friend who is, I think it was, like, his third appearance on the show. And he's always, he's a big proponent of David Allen's work, Getting Things Done, which is a book that he had published maybe, like, 10 years ago now. And it's a seminal work in, you know, sort of the touch, or I'm sorry, you get something in your inbox, you either, you touch it once, that is, you open it, and if you're going to open it, then you should do something with it, right? Mm-hmm. You get an email, you either file it in your archive, or you write back to that person, or you delete it. Very often, we're sort of out and about, right? We just sort of see things come into our inbox. We're like, we'll get to it later. But you read it. So it's the idea that I should just get it done now. I should just do something with it now. And he was talking about trying to carve out more space. We're sort of setting it and forgetting it, like Ron Popeil style.
Mm-hmm.
So that he's creating sort of like location-based aware things like in his phone, sort of OmniFocus stuff, which is an app that uses the getting things done method. And so he'll set sort of contexts for things. So if he's running under his errands or context for errands, he may have like a list of things he just put in there randomly when he knows he needs it. Like he needs paper towels, he needs to buy new toilet paper, he needs nuts and bolts, you know. And he puts those in certain contexts so that when he's out and about, he'll get, like, location reminders that say, hey, you know, you're near a Home Depot. You know, you're near the Home Depot you designated as your main store. Pop in. These are the 5 things that are in your area right now. It'll cut down on the amount of time you have to deal with it. Go pick up the toilet paper, the nuts and bolts, and all of these things you can accomplish because you're nearby. Mm-hmm. You know, because very often I think we waste time by having to repeat things, like go to a Home Depot, go to a store. And then you get home and you're like, oh, really? Did I forget the one thing I meant to get while I was there? You know, the whole reason we went to the store in the first place, I didn't get that thing. I got 8 other things that crept up, sort of mission creep, you know, that sort of piles on. But these aren't the things that I actually set about to go and get. And, you know, we're always trying to find out easier ways to do things and carve out time for ourselves. But at the end of the day, you know, is it one of those things where you say to yourself, I've got 2 hours, I'm going to sit back and thoroughly enjoy myself now? Or in that 2 hours, it's sort of, again, mission creep. I've got 2 hours to myself. I've kind of...
This is going to be your new book, Clayton, Mission Creep.
Well, you know what it is. It, you know, Dana Perino, the former White House press secretary, she jokes that whenever she comes to the studio, like she'll, before she had her own show on the network, she used to get all sorts of other producers would sort of bug her throughout the day while she's in the studio. Hey, you know, I know you're here already. You're in the building. You want to come on at like 1 p.m. and do that show too? And then like the 3 p.m. producer would be like, hey, you know, you want to come on that show and do that show too? And she's like, I joke that being in the studio, when it becomes like mission creep, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You came here to do one thing, and 8 things ended up happening. Mm-hmm. And I like that phrase. And so, you know, do you find that when you have 2 hours to kill, that you can literally sit there and you're not going to grab, you know, your phone and answer emails, grab your BlackBerry, do different things, or jump online? Like, you're just going to sit and relax for 2 hours and read a book. Can you be that focused, or things inevitably getting in your way?
Right. Well, one thing I've noticed, and I know this is not unique to me, right? This is a real phenomenon of the human brain. This was once told to me over a really awkward business lunch I had. My gosh, this must have been 11 years ago. I can't believe it's been this long. But 11 years ago, I had a really awkward business lunch. And a woman who was supposed to be training me on a new computer system made this remark to me, and I was stunned by this information. She was studying this. She said that in the brain, in the active conscious brain space, an uncompleted task takes up 3 times the amount of memory space as a completed one. So if your brain knows that there's something that needs to be done, it will think about it 3 times more often than it would if, you know, whatever, it had been completed or whatever. I don't know how anyone ever established this information. I don't know what kind of study was done. But I believe that to be true, because the minute you relax, and for me, usually this is like right after I get in the car, I get the temperature right, I find a song on shuffle mode that I want to listen to.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving the house where, you know, the computer is, which is where I do most of my work. That's when all the things that I needed to do in front of the computer creep up into my mind. So it's in that moment when I am trying to relax that all that information kind of springs to the forefront, right? These uncompleted tasks bubble up to the top of my conscious, and I'm like, you didn't get this done, you didn't get this done, you didn't get this done. When I'm preoccupied with other things and other things are taking up, you know, that forefront of my brain space, of course they don't pop up. It's during the moments when I attempt to relax that's when they spring up. So in that way, I mean, unless I really do decide, had a really hectic couple of weeks, so I just decided I finally hooked up the VCR, and I thought I am going to watch one uninterrupted wrestling match today. I just decided to do that. And, you know, I mean, how long does that really take? Well, by the time you find it, you know what I mean? You get the tracking right so that there aren't the lines and the static on the screen. And
the V hold.
Right, the V hold.
You know,
and the
I bet
H
there's
hold.
A whole section of our audience that has no idea what we're talking about, tracking and V hold.
You know, back around, I think this is like in episode, this is like in the 70s or 80s of the episode numbers of The Grizz. We talked about kids that were born in a certain year, the things that they would never know. They would, and one of them was phones with cords. That always stayed with me.
Yeah.
That, like, a kid that was born in such and such a year will never, ever see a phone with a cord on it.
Answering machines.
Right. Like, that was one.
I have to say V-holds.
V-holds are a huge one.
Yeah. And I have to say, honestly, I was thinking about this the other day, compact discs. Mm-hmm. You know, like, my son, he's at a, like, I mean, he's grabbed one of mine. You know, he's, like, plays with the case here and there. But for the most part, like, he doesn't know, like,
He understand that technology, Clayton? What the heck?
No, he understands. He wants to hear music. You know, he wants to hear a song. He'll just ask for mommy to put it on her iPad, you know, and and that's kind of how he, if he wants to hear a song or on the iPhone or something like that, he doesn't understand, like, the physical media. So I'm sure there's a whole generation of kids, it's going to be crazy, that they're not going to understand what a CD is or, like, album art, you know, the way that we would understand it. We're opening up a pamphlet to look at album art.
Mm-hmm.
Travesty.
That's so much that experience, in the same way that, you know, to a whole generation of people experiencing vinyl records, you know, and like taking that out of the giant cardboard square that it comes in and the huge liner notes that must have come in, you know, it must have been like book-sized liner notes. It's like getting a magazine. All that kind of stuff. Like, that was the way they experienced that sort of thing. And, you know, that was dying by the time You know, I think I probably owned on vinyl when it was still current, not like as a kitschy retro kind of thing. I maybe owned 10 records before cassettes just kind of killed the record album, you know? Like I had Thriller and I had In 3D by Weird Al Yankovic and I had a handful of those and then it was too late. You know, the cassette took over. And there's going to be people that, yeah, that maybe music in their mind doesn't represent a physical media whatsoever. And that's a shame. It should. That's what fills up the racks on your walls. What would be on those racks, Clayton?
It's true. You know, there are a couple of, I think I sent you an article the other day, and maybe it was Rolling Stone. They cataloged like the best vinyl or record stores, the independent record stores in the country.
Hmm.
And you know, I was looking around. I mean, they're all over the country, scattered about. And they, I think they chose like the top, maybe like 20 or 15. And there were some really neat ones, and some of which I would like to go visit. And some of them were close to us, actually. You know, some in like the D.C. area. I think there's one in, you know, like up in Buffalo. They're scattered all over. Chicago had a couple of them.
Sure.
And you know, people looking through vinyl bins. I think I have a few vinyl, too, that I bought a bunch of police records.
Right, but that's like after the fact. You know what I mean? Like, we weren't of the age where... I mean, you would have been, what, 6 or 7 police albums?
Like, my mom had... my grandmother had, like, a big record player. Do you remember that thing in my living room? It was, like, a big, giant...
Of course, yeah.
...brown record player.
It was the inadvertent center of that room.
Right, and she had a bunch of records, and, you know, we had some in the house, and that was what we listened to music on very early on. I remember in the early 80s, we had this my grandmother's record player, and we would put on, like, you know, her Beach Boys records and dance around the room, or, you know, we got Michael Jackson's Thriller, and we remember playing that on vinyl in there. And that was one of the early records, probably one of the few records that we'd ever purchased, you know. But then, yeah, you're right, the cassette tape just took over and killed it.
Yeah, and the cassette tape, I think comparatively, they had a short run because I think the CD arrived so soon thereafter. You know, from when vinyl really became extinct to the arrival of the CD, there really is only, I don't know, handful of years there.
Right.
Do you remember, incidentally, what the first CD you ever got was?
Yes, the first CD I ever purchased was, I bought it in November of... I'm forgetting my years here. I don't know if it was like 91, because I had asked for Christmas a CD player. That's what I wanted that year. And I kind of just, I was sort of all in, right? I was like, I just want like a few CDs and a CD player for Christmas. And the Sony CD player. And it was like a 5-disc CD changer, I think.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I remember that thing.
And I love it. Man, boy, did I play the crap out of that thing, you know? Shuffle mode. And I'll get to that in a second. But the first CD I ever purchased, I purchased in like about 3 to 4 weeks ahead of getting the CD player. I hoped that I was getting the CD player, and I bought the CD. And my parents were like, "Well, how are you going to play that?" Like, "Well, I hope that maybe for Christmas I get a CD player." They're like, "Well, keep hoping."
Very you know? Coy. Very coy.
Yeah, they were going, "Oh, we're not getting you a CD player." I got Pink Floyd's Animals. It's the first CD I ever
bought. What a peculiar choice.
Well, you know, I loved, you know, I'm such a huge Pink Floyd fan, right? So I wanted, and I'd never owned any of it. I would always listen to it over at my friend's house, and I never owned any Pink Floyd on cassette. So it made sense for me to get, like, you know, really nice digital sound. You're going to hear this incredible album with digital sound, and it's going to be great. So why not get, you know, one of those great digital bands, you know, somebody who's is sort of sonic. So I got Pink Floyd's Animals. Do you remember your first one?
It was a box load of them because Columbia House, the CD club, which no longer exists, delivered to me 10 for one penny. So I got like the Cars' Greatest Hits and Harry Connick Jr.'s We Are in Love and Legend of a Band, The Moody Blues Story. I got a bunch all in that first box.
Yeah.
But the Cars' Greatest Hits, I remember that very distinctly. I think that was the first one out of the box. That was the first one into the player. And that same Christmas that I got, you know, the stereo I had that had both a CD player and a cassette player on it, is when I also got that Listen to the Band,
right?
Monkees 4-disc box set. So, yeah, I kind of like got a wave of them all at once. And then Then it was all good grief from that point. It just took over whatever space I lived in.
I'll be curious, our listeners, you can weigh in on our Twitter page, Grizzly Bear Cafe. What was the first CD you ever purchased? We'll read a few next week.
Yeah, and it kind of calls to mind, too, like some of the crazy lengths you would go to in the pre-internet era to find music. You know, I think it was just last week on the Grizz, it was talking about that trip that we had to make a couple counties over to, like, hunt down a copy of The Prison, because there was, like, one music store that happened to have that album. And, you know, that really doesn't exist anymore. I mean, unless you're into something so obscure that it's not available online, that you can't find it that way. I mean, what's really more, at any point in time, what is more than four clicks away? Like, the idea that you'd have to get in your car and drive somewhere in the hope that they still had it in stock, you know what I mean? Like, those days are gone. That's something our sons will never know, Mr. Morris.
It's true. To go, you know, if you want a rare CD or a rare book or something, you know, you just go to Amazon and, you know, if they don't carry it currently, there's always, like, the dealers, the third-party vendors that Amazon works with that can get you any book you want, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, of course, into the paranormal, and very often there are these paranormal books that, for whatever reason, the publisher is moronic and hasn't put them out and available on Kindle yet. Mm-hmm. Some of the larger publishers are smart enough to do that, but others aren't. And then you have to sort of go through them, and you find these third-party vendors, and they'll, you know, link you to their website and send it. But you're right, just online. I don't know how else. Or just go to eBay if you wanted to find something incredibly rare, you know?
Yeah. Now, one of the things I think about when I think about music like this is the phenomenon of the cutout bin. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, CDs that didn't sell, they were being marked down, or because of their distribution agreement, you know, they only had to spend so much time on the shelf. And maybe after a year, if they didn't sell, they could be marked down to like $5, and a little piece of the jewel case would be cut out by this little almost hole punch-like device. And they'd get put in a bin in the front or the back of the store, depending on what store you went to. And this was, for lack of a better expression, the cutout bin, where you'd find discounted CDs. And what tended to end up in these, I think, were, you know, like albums that had no hits on them, or the albums of one-hit wonders, you know? So they were really popular for a period of time when that song was hot on the radio, but it never had a follow-up. You know, during the surge of popularity, the record stores might have overordered the quantity that they thought they would need. But, you know, then, well, what do you know? That's, you know, there were no follow-up hits or whatever, and all of a sudden, like, London Beat, you know, they didn't have a big follow-up there. So off to the cutout bin, all these extra ones would go. And one of the things, if you haven't heard us talk about it before, I'll certainly spend a minute here in a second talking about it, is I'm always fascinated by... especially because as a child of the 80s, but also, you know, I listened to music from other decades as well, the phenomenon of the one-hit wonder. In fact, we've even, you know, flirted with disaster by bringing on artists that are sometimes called that here on the program. For example, not all that long ago, we had Clark Datchler, the lead singer of Johnny Hates Jazz, here on the program. I don't know what that was, you know, a couple dozen episodes ago. And they are often thought of as a one-hit wonder band, right? People predominantly know the song Shattered Dreams by Johnny Hates Jazz, and that's it. And previous to him, you know, we had Stan Bush, who was perhaps most identified with the song The Touch. And sadly, despite his incredibly diverse catalog of stuff, people even think that of Thomas Dolby, a very recent guest of ours here on The Grizz, right? Because of his hit She Blinded Me with Science. So I thought what I would do is share with you some information about some one-hit wonder types and some other interesting characters in the world of music. But this is about the part of the program, I think, where we should probably stop for a second and thank one of our show sponsors. What do you think, Clayton?
Yes, and then we'll also do a little public service announcement about a new way that you can listen to our show. I'll have Mike sort of handle that. But first, let's thank our show sponsor this week, our friends over at Gazelle.com. These guys do a great job of taking your used electronics, those devices that you don't need anymore, that you don't want, that are just collecting dust, and they give you cash for them. So what they do is they have a website. You go to gazelle.com. You type in what gadget you have. Let's say you've got an old MacBook Pro, right? They just rolled out the new Retina MacBook Pro, which is arguably the fastest, and it is by far the best resolution screen on a laptop, on a computer ever made. And so for videographers, for people who are doing photo editing and a lot of video work, you know, maybe you want to buy this new one. You want to get rid of your old MacBook Pro. So they take, you know, you type in the information, they give you a quote, say, hey, we're going to pay you $1,500 for that. Well, that's great. That saves me the problem of having to deal with eBay or something, right? So you got these old cameras, you've got an old iPod laying around, you've got an old MP3 player, maybe you got an old Android phone sitting around, you want to update a new Android phone, the new Galaxy S3 phone, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You type it in, they'll give you a little a quote, they'll even pay the shipping so that you just mail it off to them. They'll pay you, you know, pay for the shipping, they'll even send you a box. And then when they get it, they email you the entire step of the way. They let you know, hey, we've received it, everything's in working order like you said it was, and your PayPal payment is on the way. It's that simple. We love them a whole lot. Check them out at gazelle.com and tell them we sent you. So there you go.
What you've said is true, Clayton. What you've said is true. Hey, before we talk some more music here, as we are wont to do on the Grizz, you know there's a brand new app for your iOS device called Podcasts. You ever hear of this?
I did.
Podcasts. Yeah. It's a little purple square. It's going to appear there on your screen, and inside it, it's going to make it so much easier to find everything that you want and to subscribe. And you know it's free to subscribe to everything here on the Grizzly Productions Network, not just us here at the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. But you may know I'm over on a podcast called Daddy on Board that publishes every Friday. Over the weekends, I team up with Clayton's wife, Natalie. We are host and hostess of The Trending Show. And there's other great programs on our network, too. Comic book fans, check out the weekly Long Box. Sports fans, we've got the Sports Report with Paul Roberts just for you. We've got a recently launched podcast that we're very proud of here at the network. On the Spectrum, The Autism Show, which features the husband-wife duo of Don and Jen Wade, who's a board-certified behavioral analyst, talking about everything on the spectrum of autism disorders, all that and a bunch of other superlative content we bring to you for free week in and week out here at the Grizzly Productions Network. Go and subscribe for free. Download that podcast app. It's so easy.
It really is. And the podcast app, what's cool about it is it, you know, you can set it so that it can automatically download your shows so you don't have to worry about it. So, and it also, when you hit subscribe, which great is, so please subscribe to The Grizz on this app if you have an iOS device, because what it does is it keeps you subscribed, and it helps us out, because very often in iTunes on your PC or your Mac, it'll unsubscribe you if you haven't listened in a little while, which God knows you should be listening every week, but if you didn't, you know, you'd have to hit that refresh button and download it again. It's a pain in the butt. And you can actually set inside the app to keep the episodes. You can say, you know, what episodes to keep. Keep the last two episodes, keep the last three episodes, keep all episodes, keep the most recent. So whatever, you know, you choose, just click that. Click automatically download. So, you know, when you're on Wi-Fi or whatever, to automatically download it for you. So when you launch the app, you'll see you've got a new Grizz on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. You can start listening right from the app. It's really cool. You can listen in double speed. You can slow it down. It's really, really nice. So check it out. It's the new Podcasts app from Apple. It's really, really going to help a lot of podcasters out. So we thank Apple for making something sweet for our audience.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got some one-hit wonders.
I've got some information for you here, and I'm going to wrap it up with some really bizarre information that I want you and I to. This is going to be one of those things where, you know, sometimes we have a conversation, and I think you or sometimes whoever I'm speaking to thinks that I'm joking, and I'm not joking. That's going to be at the end of this. Well, let's talk about some one-hit wonders, shall we? Or even some here who are not necessarily one-hit wonders. For example, I always thought this is one of the greatest recording names of all time, and this really is this guy's real name. This is not a stage name. You may remember, like, right at the end of 1979, going into 1980, Randy Van Warmer had a hit with Just When I Needed You Most. This is like a popular soft rock song, like adult contemporary before that was even, you know, like a thing people said, adult contemporary. It was just called soft rock. Randy Van Warmer had the hit Just When I Needed You Most. Here's the quiz part for you, Clayton. We're gonna test your knowledge. Some of this, I think, is going to surprise you. Is Randy Van Warmer alive or dead?
Because I don't know the name at all.
You don't know Randy Van Warmer? You don't know Just When I Needed You Most?
I know the song. I don't know that I... You want to play it and see if I know it?
Well, I think we will. We'll insert them, but I don't know that you're going to hear it through your headset.
Right.
I don't know how I could do that.
Okay. Well, I'll dig through it here. I'm going to find it for us. Randy Van Warmer, Just When I Needed You Most. I know the song name, and I can sort of hum it in my head. I just don't know the name. I didn't know. I was not familiar with his
name. Let me see. Yeah, I don't know how I could do this. I don't think you're going to hear it. If I play it, it's just going to play in my headset, like you're not going to hear it. But all right, well, that's not a good one to start with. Randy Van Warmer, he died like 8 years ago. Randy Van Warmer is dead. So sorry there, Randy Van Warmer is dead. Now, this one is a bizarre, a strange one, I'll admit, and is kind of a weird favorite of both Clayton and I. You, of course, remember Taco.
Oh, sure.
From the 80s, right? This is one of Clayton's very favorite 80s one-hit wonders, right? I'm not speaking out of turn by saying that.
No, I love Taco.
You love Taco, and perhaps his only really well-known single, Putting on the Ritz, right?
Absolutely, yeah. 1983 or somewhere in there.
Yeah, you're right in there. It also has one of the weirdest music videos of all time, if I can say that. You know that really is his name, right? That Taco really is Taco's first name.
Really?
Yes, that is not a stage name. I'm not kidding. He's Indonesian. Taco, who really, he had his biggest career surge when he was in Germany. As we pointed out here, in the very early 80s, he had it big with Putting on the Ritz, like a cover of that, famous song from decades previous, Putting on the Ritz. It was an international bestseller. Taco, alive or dead?
I think Taco died. I know that Taco died in the 90s.
Hmm.
Or am I thinking of Falco?
You are. Taco is alive, Falco dead.
Falco dead, Taco alive.
Austrian rock singer Falco records Rock Me Amadeus / died.
So should we play some? Tell me what songs you want to play, because I have them. I can pull them up here and play a little.
If you don't know, I think we should definitely play some Putting on the Ritz by Taco, who is still alive.
All right, here's a little Taco.
Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coat, perfect fits. Putting on the Ritz. Dress up like a $1 million trooper. Trying hard to look like Gary Cooper. Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their mitts.
There you go, a little Putting on the Ritz from Taco. And I have to admit, I ran out to try to find that album, try to find that single, that and Abracadabra. But I remember that distinctly. Mm. In the early 80s, my parents painting the house in the spring of whatever year that was. Yep. Painting our house blue in just outside of Philadelphia. And I was in the front yard. I used to wait for that song to come on the radio. And it would come on like every hour, But I would dance around the yard like crazy. I would love that song.
Yeah, I had a similar story about hunting down Steppin' Out by Joe Jackson. But nevertheless, you touched on something I was about to go to next anyway. So, Abracadabra, which is one of Clayton's other favorite 80s hits, of course, by the venerable Steve Miller of the Steve Miller Band, a veteran rocker whose career spans a number of decades. He was born back in 1943. He's a native of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Is Steve Miller, who, the Joker, Fly Like an Eagle, tons and tons and tons of hits. But has not toured at all recently, although he used to be always on the summer concert circuit, so to speak. Steve Miller, alive or dead?
Definitely alive, because I think I would know. There would certainly be some news if Steve Miller died, right? Maybe
you would think that, right?
If Taco died, I think maybe we get like a little headline somewhere. Maybe you see it on MTV or something. But I'm going to say Steve Miller, still alive.
You are correct. Steve Miller has not yet died.
Should we play a little Abracadabra?
I think we should.
All right, here it is. Abracadabra by Steve Miller. This was my favorite song as a child and drove my parents nuts trying to find this album. Here it is. Kiss me, baby, let the fire get higher. There you go, Abracadabra. I wonder if I could force my son to like that song.
I don't think you have to force him. That's a great song.
It's a great song.
You may recall, end of the 70s into the early 80s, Dan Hartman had a couple of hits. My favorite is I Can Dream About You.
Oh, yeah, great song.
Very catchy song. But he also was responsible for Free Ride, which got covered a lot by a lot of different groups. That was one of the songs that he's best known for. He was also in the Edgar Winter Group, was Dan Hartman. But I love that song, I Can Dream About You.
It is
really
a great
memorable song.
Song.
Do you have that handy? Do you want to play that? I don't have that one.
Yeah, I have that one handy. And, he also had a good song that I like, too, called Instant Replay.
Yes, that's right. That's also him.
Yeah. So here it is. Yeah. I Can Dream About You, and we'll figure out if he's alive or dead, because I have no idea. Here it is. I Can Dream About You. Dan Hartman, I Can Dream About You. You know what I love, though, that's listed? It's on an album, in an 80s album that I found here. For 80s, oh, here, don't quit the music, 80s weight loss music. Mm. 80s weight loss, weightlifting, cardio, weight loss, and abs. So that would have been on an 80s weight loss album.
I like that. Singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Dan Hartman, alive or dead?
I'm going to say alive. It seems he's probably got a healthy life.
You'd think so, but he died 18 years ago.
Wow.
He died in 1994.
Then?
No, he died at the age of 43. Native of Harrisburg, PA, here in our home state. Clayton and I are both Pennsylvania natives. He was from Harrisburg. He died at the age of 43 from complications from AIDS.
Wow.
So,
I mean, wouldn't you just die from AIDS? AIDS, complications from AIDS? AIDS would be the complicating factor, right? So what?
It was very, AIDS is very complicated. Have you ever looked at it?
Right.
But it's like, oh, what a mess here in my blood.
Right. So it's not complications from. It is the factor, right? Complications from cancer. Like, cancer is the reason you died.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
I don't know. I was really stunned to learn that we were still in high school.
Yeah.
When old Dan Hartman kicked the bucket. Sorry to hear that about Dan Hartman.
Now, was he ever in a band, or he was just a solo guy?
Edgar Winter Group. He was in the Edgar Winter Group. So, this kind of falls into the same thing with Taco, in that Peter Schilling, now he is German. Taco is Indonesian, but had fame in Germany. It's also what recalls Falco, right? Because Germany and Austria share a border. Mm-hmm. Peter Schilling had a true one-hit wonder here called Major Tom Coming Home. A really famous 80s song that gets revisited all the time. It's sort of like his own take on Bowie's Space Oddity. Do you remember this song, Major Tom Coming Home?
If I heard it, I probably... How do you spell his last name?
Schilling, Schilling. Peter Schilling. I guarantee within 30 seconds you will know that song. Are you looking it up? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, because I spelled his name. I had SH first, but Major Tom, and then it's a Volig Los Galost. It's like the in parentheses, I guess.
That might be a different language version of it, because he is German, but the version here is Major Tom Coming Home. I'm sure it would be the most popular thing of his if you're using iTunes as the method of discovering.
Yeah, Major Tom. All right, I'll give this a try. Should we try this? See if this works.
Yeah, I'll tell you if this is it.
Yeah.
No, that is not it.
Yeah, that's an extended club remix.
Right.
We'll have a karaoke one.
Yeah, I have it here. I'm going to hold my. Let's see if this will work here. I'm going to put this.
Well, we can always drop it in. Like, we're going to drop all these.
Here we go. See if you can hear this. Is that working? Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear that. Okay, now I definitely.
Let me skip ahead.
It.
Standing there alone, the ship is waiting. All systems are go. Are you sure? Control is not convinced, but the computer has the evidence. No need to abort. The countdown starts. Watching in a trance, the crew is certain, nothing left to chance. All is working, trying to relax. Up in the capsule, send me up a drink.
Okay, absolutely. In fact, that was used recently in a commercial. I mean, it may have even been used. Yeah, I don't know where it was, but I certainly saw that in a commercial recently.
Yeah, that gets licensed and relicensed endlessly. Now, in Europe, he's had over 20 hits.
Wow.
But that's really all he's known for in the United States, Peter Schilling. Peter Schilling, the German one-hit wonder, alive or dead?
I'm giving these guys the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to say alive.
He is. And he's on tour this summer.
Wow, he seems like a producer type. You know, like he seems like a Thomas Dolby, can handle himself musically in, you know.
That's how he stays alive.
Right. You know, he's able to do movie scores, that sort of stuff, car commercials, etc. Speaking of which, the other night we watched 21 Jump Street.
I heard this on the trending show.
Oh, yeah. Very funny. Very funny movie. You know, hey, there are very few comedies that are worth watching, I think. It's safe to say, right? But it's very funny. Johnny, I won't ruin it. But anyway, it's 21 Jump Street. Mark Mothersbaugh does the soundtrack to it. Of course,
yes,
he does like all of these soundtracks. And if you're like, wow, this is really good, at the end of it, check. I bet it's Mark Mothersbaugh, of course, from The Doors.
Or from Devo.
Devo. Wasn't he in the... No. But didn't he... Was he not in The Doors?
Mark Mothersbaugh?
I thought he was in The Doors first, and Devo... Am I wrong about that?
Wow. That's totally news to me, if he was in The Doors. I've never heard that before.
Wow, I thought that was the case. Okay, maybe I'm totally off.
According to Wikipedia, no. He was the founder of Devo, and he's been with them since 1972.
Then who am I thinking of that was in The Doors that does a lot of movie soundtracks? I know there's somebody who's who does that.
This one's totally over my head. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, he's done everything. I'm looking through. He's done all like the Wes Anderson films, The Life Aquatic, Nick and Nora's theme for that movie.
He draws a helicopter on an episode of Yo Gabba Gabba.
Wow, he does all sorts of stuff.
He really does. He stays pretty busy. Does Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo. Hey, now that song, every time I hear that song, Major Tom Coming Home by Peter Schilling, I recall early 90s alterna band, which got some huge radio play, thanks really to like being pushed on MTV and everything else, called The Ocean Blue. And they had one hit called Drifting Falling, which was really, really popular in 1991. I think they got a lot of play in our area because they're from Hershey. The Ocean Blue are local to us. They're just a county over. The Ocean Blue, you might be surprised to know I won't make a quiz out of this. They're still together. They still make albums.
Huh.
I was stunned to discover this, The Ocean Blue.
I am looking up their little Here's a little write-up for them in iTunes. Hershey, Pennsylvania's The Ocean Blue are practically masters of sweet, gentle, vaguely British pop, combining sparkling, jangling guitars with crisp, sweet vocals and thoroughly melodic songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Still out there. Drifting Falling, an outstanding track, one of my very, very favorites. The 90s were not my favorite decade for music, but I love the song Drifting Falling by The Ocean Blue.
Should we play that here?
Yes.
Giddy up. Here's Drifting Falling from The Ocean Blue. You know, it's funny. I haven't heard that in a while because I don't have that song. I know it, but I don't have it. So I'll definitely have to get it. But I will say that it reminds me quite maybe like a slightly slower version of like an XTC.
Yeah, there's definitely the influence of that. They were heavily influenced by like the Smiths and you know, like early alternative bands. So I'm sure there's an XTC influence in there as well. Now, recalling the great lengths we've gone in the past to track down songs, for me, the impossible to capture song was discovered on a 1986 mixtape left in my station wagon after a camping trip. And I spent years, really until Clayton's friend was able to identify for me, your friend Eric, who we've sometimes jokingly referred to as the idiot savant of the Billboard charts,
right,
was able to place for me a song by the band Wax UK.
Right.
Their song Right Between the Eyes, which and this wasn't even their hit. Wax UK, when people think of them as a one-hit wonder band, they talk about Bridge to Your Heart,
right,
which was their highest charting U.S. single.
But the song of theirs I love is Right Between the Eyes, which was like a secondary hit of theirs. And they were fronted by Andrew Gold, who, this is my weird tie to Andrew Gold. I actually found him randomly on the internet, and he was kind enough to communicate with me over email. And even at one point, it sent me like a VHS tape of some performances that Wax had done, which was really mind-boggling for me. Now, but Andrew's best known, probably to U.S. audiences, either one, for his one-hit wonder in the late 70s, Lonely Boy, which is an excellent song, or for two television theme songs, which are like immortal. The Golden Girls theme, Thank You for Being a Friend, is Andrew Gold's song.
Huh.
And he performs The Final Frontier, which is the theme from Mad About You, even though that song was written by Paul Reiser, who also starred in the show. Andrew Gold, of course, also would sit in with Paul Schaefer on David Letterman's show.
Right.
Andrew Gold, alive or dead?
I'm going to say dead, because I think, didn't he just die or something? Or you were a little heartbroken about this?
He did. He died just last year, did Andrew Gold. I was distraught to learn this because I always felt a bizarre connection to him from those few times we communicated directly. Very disappointed to learn that Andrew Gold had passed away. He died in his sleep.
Hmm. Well, at least he died peacefully.
Well, he did have horrible renal cancer, which I don't know if you know this.
From complications of it?
It is, and that's, you know, that's, they mean, it's in your rectum. So, that's horrible. Horrible. Thank God he went in his sleep.
Well, I'm glad
not
we're
like
not laughing
jamming a fork up his rear, like, this is the worst.
Oh, so, God.
Sorry,
should we
Gold,
listen to Right Between the Eyes?
Please.
Yeah.
Please.
It's a great song. Here it is, Right Between the Eyes from Wax UK.
Find that song in iTunes, or you happen to have that handy somewhere?
No, I found it right in iTunes. I'm up at the mountains, so I have my my MacBook Pro, and I'm just on iTunes here. I have my full music library at home.
Yeah. I do love that song, man. That is an excellent song. So there's one more weird one I want to throw out to you, and I really want you and I to discuss this, because the more I read about this, the more fascinated I became. In the early 90s, I'm going to say 93, give or take, a song landed on radio, got very, very little radio play, but it was the kind of thing that showed up on 120 minutes, so on and so forth, and it was called American Life in the Summertime. It was by an artist named Francis Dunnery, and I loved this song. And he's had some other, you know, stuff that he's released. None of it could really be called a hit, to be fair. But he's prolific, is Francis Dunnery. And for a while, he was kind of like the guy, if you Googled him up, there was no information about Francis Dunnery anywhere. It was as if he hadn't even existed. And then all of a sudden, there's a wealth of information about Francis Dunnery out there. And Francis Dunnery, this is one of the things that fascinated me about him immediately, is he currently resides in the Pocono Mountains.
Really?
Which is where I am right now. Right. So he's not far. And Francis Dunnery does not tour. But he will come to your house and play for you.
What?
He does house concerts. And apparently, he does really well doing them. If you look at his website, he's got them booked everywhere for the rest of the year. At people's houses. And there's a form right on his website that's like, want to find out how I come and play at your house? Just fill this out.
Wow.
And I was blown away by this. Like, this to me was like a revolutionary idea, right? That this dude will come and play in your house.
Because you and I, as the Edgar Oliver Rice and the Pistachios, should also set up a similar form. Can you imagine, actually?
It wouldn't have to work, because no one would ever fill that form out.
Right.
But Francis Dunnery, on the other hand, seems to be making a go of this. Now, as I read more and more about Francis Dunnery, because all I knew was American Life in the Summertime. I didn't know anything else about this guy other than that is the name attached to that song. He is apparently very, very, very passionate about astrology.
Hmm.
And part of getting him to come to your house is he's going to talk to you about astrology. And he'll be there for 90 minutes. I did more digging because I was immediately intrigued by this idea that Francis Dunnery would come to our house.
Once again, if I ever ask you that I need you to do some spreadsheet work, I need some things taken care of for some of the Grizzly Productions audience, I'll remember. Again, this is going in my Rolodex.
Yeah. But let's be fair here. As similar as you and I are, you and I do have two very different skill sets. Like, there's no two ways about this. I'll give you an example. This is a great example, right? Just if this were to come up, this isn't a real thing. I'm just throwing this out there. Let's say, for example, we had to go and have dinner with, like, Gazelle.com, who's one of the great show sponsors, and one of the probably the longest in terms of months, like total tenure with the production company, Grizzly Production. They've been with us longer than anybody, right. Gazelle. If we had to go and have dinner with them for some reason, and only one of us could go, it should be you. Like, you have a certain skill set that I don't have, and vice versa, even though we have a lot of skills in common. And this skill, Clayton, and you know full well, there's no way to monetize this skill of mine, because...
Well, create a form that people, you can go to people's houses. People can fill out a form and have you come to their house.
No one would want that. There's no way to make any money from this. But when you need bizarre trivia or things like that about, I'm your guy. Like, I'll help you with this. So you can, on this submission page, you can even specify what kind of show you want Francis to do at your house. Like, if you want him to bring more astrology-centric stuff, or you just want the music show. And when I was reading this form, first of all, I'm thinking, no way. Like, no one's going to do this. And then I looked at his tour page, and I was blown away. Like, he's spending a week in Europe doing a bunch of houses over there, then he's over here. But because he is so close to you and I, he's in the Poconos somewhere, which, granted, the Poconos is a large geographical area, don't get me wrong. I thought, should we aspire to have Francis Dunnery pay us a visit?
Why not? Have him come to my house in the Poconos. We'll do a little house concert and have him talk astrology.
Mm-hmm. I think we can opt out of the astrology talk, because, to be honest, like, I'm not very receptive to that type of thing, and I think about 5 minutes into it, I'll have enough. Right. On the other hand, I really just kind of – there's an option on there where it's like I'm not selecting what type of show. You know, Francis just does his thing. I'd be kind of curious to just let him do his thing. Like, how is it – and more than anything, like, how does this guy make money doing this? Like, how does he survive? Like, has he made enough from his other work? He runs a record label. He's a producer. He's worked with some very notable people. The lead singer from Squeeze, like, I was fascinated to read about that. I love the band Squeeze. So I was just kind of reading about him, and I was like, what a bizarre but fascinating character Francis Dunnery is. When the last time I looked him up online to find more information about him, it literally was like he didn't exist.
This is fascinating.
And now it's like there's a glut of information, right? He's got maybe the most detailed Wikipedia page I've ever seen, a really comprehensive website of his own. It was just where were you? Did you just find the internet this year? Like, how did this happen?
This is weird. I mean, I think it's interesting. He probably does make good money, right? Now, does he only do? You say he lives in the Poconos, but he, you know, he's from England.
Yes.
So he just chooses to live here, I guess.
Right. Yeah, he's lived in the U.S. for a good chunk of his life, as is detailed on his Wikipedia page in great detail, like exactly where he's lived for what years, you know, that sort of thing.
That is fascinating. I'm sure he makes probably good money. And we probably – and here, I'm going to put your skill set to good use. In fact, inquire as to how much he charges. Mm-hmm. Fill out that submission form. Inquire how much he charges, and we'll do a little follow-up next week.
I think what the idea is like maybe you get 8 or 10 of your friends together, and you all chip in to cover his fee, and he comes to your house for an hour and a half. That's my guess. That's what is what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you hire him for a party. Now, I'm wondering if he plays just like his songs, or he does like cover band stuff too. So he'll play like, you know, he'll play some Genesis stuff.
He's a huge Genesis fan. You know, he was even up for the job when Phil Collins left. He was one of the guys that was trying to get that job that went to that no-name guy, and then they had that awful single Congo or whatever that tanked. Yeah, he's a big prog rocker, is Francis Dunnery. So the whole thing is fascinating to me, that the guy just comes to your house.
Well, you know, I guess not everyone can sell out arenas, and people have to make money in other ways. And I mean, you think there would be how many, you know, how many venues or events take place? I mean, heck, up here in this area, you know, we were up kind of for the early 4th of July. I've got to work 4th of July, so we just kind of came up for a week while I'm doing some paternity time off. And, you know, there's like a pig roast where they got like a DJ. There's like an opening of a new hotel up here that's gorgeous, by the way. You know where that coffee shop, that my favorite coffee shop in the world, I think, that I took you to? There's a new hotel that opened like right next to it. You know, they're doing like an event with blues music. They've got like live, they've got a live blues musician on a Sunday night. Every Sunday night it's called Blues and Barbecue. Every Sunday night they're doing there. So, that you know, they're paying people for that. I don't know how much you pay for somebody like that. Maybe $1,000, maybe
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. I mean,
maybe a couple
the reality
bucks.
Let me ask you this. When I brought that up, right, we're talking about an almost one-hit wonder from the early 90s. Does that name ring a bell with you at all, Francis Dunnery?
No, I don't remember that name at all. In fact, even on iTunes, I'm having a difficult time understanding what's him. Like, his name is associated with like all these different albums, like, and albums that have been released recently. 2005, like the Gully Flats Boys was an album. Man was released in 2003 by Francis Dunnery. Hometown in 2001, 1994, 1995, 2003.
Right, it's tough to tell. And in a way, he's almost, in my mind, he's a little bit like a less popular version of Paul Carrack.
Right.
In that Paul Carrack was in Mike and the Mechanics, he was in Ace, you know, he was in Squeeze, he was in all these bands, but Paul Carrack's brand name, like, he as the brand is nowhere near as powerful as the acts he's associated with, right? Because people do know Mike and the Mechanics, and people do know Squeeze, and, you know, these other bands. But Paul Carrack's name in and of itself doesn't really carry a lot of weight. And I get the feeling that's kind of the case with Francis Dunnery as well. Like, the acts he's associated with eclipse him. But I'm just endlessly curious about this whole experience. And he even writes about it on his website. He says, you know, like, it's more like a friend who comes over and hangs out with you for an hour and a half and then leaves. He's like, it's not like your traditional concert experience. I don't show up like, hey, I'm that rock and roll guy you booked. Like, the more I read about it, he's just a really, really intriguing character. So,
why don't we pick a song? Because you have a song handy we can play, and we'll drop it in here. But because I can't, what's a good song to play? I'm having a difficult time even finding one.
Right. Yeah. I'd say American Life in the Summertime is the one. Now, when I did that trick before for the Peter Schilling song, you could hear it.
I could hear it. Yeah. Well, why don't you go ahead and play it? But we'll have. Actually, I have it here. I have it here. Never mind.
Oh, I was going to say. Okay, go ahead.
I have it here, and then we'll have, you know, Jim will drop it in clean and nice for everyone. So you're not getting these crappy versions here for us. So here it is: "American Life in the Summertime" off the album "Fearless" by Francis Dunnery.
Town boy, the streets of LA, a daytime waiter in a nighttime band, acting cool, said he was a real man, couldn't write a song to save his soul, ripped off an
old. Wow, I can safely say I don't know that song at all.
Yeah, he was on Atlantic Records for a couple years. That's how he got some radio play, and he's been independent for a while. But, you know, when we think about some of these acts that, whether you and I, we've got to be friendly with them through our work here on the Grizz, or just in general, I don't really know that we appeal to a lot of independent musicians out there, but I would wager to say, based on what I've read about this, that obviously Francis Dunnery is able to do pretty well for himself doing these house concerts.
Right.
And you've got to think, there must be other artists like that that, you know, they don't have, like, a current, like, relevant hit that's out there in the mainstream. You know, maybe like their prime earning years are a couple behind them, but of course they're still out there making great music. This is such an intriguing idea of right. Like, I'm going to people's houses and I'm just playing like that.
Right, and how would you find this guy, right? Like, if you were, you and your wife, you know, you're sitting around, you're trying to plan like a big barbecue, right? You want like 1,000
people. Barbecue needs more Francis Dunnery.
Right, like if you're planning an event, your office is planning an event or something, and you're like, you're all kicking around ideas. You know, is there like a website you go to? Like, I know for like public speakers there are, right? There's like places you go and you hire people, you know, like the speakers group, et cetera, and those sorts of places. But if you like need to hire an act like this, is there like a website you go to? And how do you arrive at him?
Right.
Of all people? Like, wouldn't you just get like a cover band, you know, or something like that just makes it easy? It just seems like an odd choice.
It does. And I don't know, because I really only discovered this in the last couple of days. I don't know that there is like a one-stop shop for like intimate acoustic house concerts.
Right.
But certainly I can think of – I'm already making a list of like people you know we should tell about this. You know what I mean? Like you know who we need to call when we get off this podcast. Because it does seem like – this is one thing, and we were talking about this a little bit on the trending show as well, and I know you don't listen to that, but
yes, I do.
We're on that podcast. You want to see what nasty things I say to your wife. That's why you listen.
I know.
You're like, oh, I'm going to wring Mike's neck.
I don't know what I have to text you later about.
So you think about this, right? The way that social media and the internet in general has allowed us to be less personal. Right, your wife put forth this idea that that on social media day you're supposed to meet up with people, that you use social media to connect with people in real life. And I argued against that point. That is not the point of the internet. The point of the internet is to protect me from ever having to meet with people in person.
Uh-huh.
Right? This is my layer of defense. My first layer of defense is the internet. But because of this, there is that increasing disconnect, right? Like, you and I talk via internet far more than we talk any other way, right? Face-to-face, we only see each other a handful of times a year.
Right.
This is – because of that, the way that the internet has leveled the playing field – and Chikara is a great example of that, right? A pro wrestling company like Chikara, which has such an intimate feel and we have such a very personal relationship with our fan base, we could not exist before the internet. Pre-internet, this company probably would have died within 90 days. And here we are. They were coming – 10 years and going. There must be artists just like a Francis Dunnery out there that would really benefit from that concept, right? That's how I found right? I Googled him. And like I said, the last time I Googled his name, I don't know when it was, a couple years ago, it was like he didn't exist. Then, within a matter of clicks, I was on his official website reading about how I get him to come to my house and play a concert. And I'm not here trying to tell you I'm a huge Francis Dunnery fan. I happen to like his song American Life in the Summertime. I've never been able to find anything else by him. But just the fact that I like that one song, and he's willing to come to my house.
Right.
Suddenly, I want to know everything there is to know about Francis Dunnery.
So I'm on Twitter now looking around, because you sparked my interest. First of all, his name is Dunnery on Twitter. D-U-N-N-E-R-Y, just Dunnery. Yeah. Yeah. And people writing him saying, "Hi, Francis, have you any plans to release the Astrology Tour on CD or any other format?" Would definitely be a seller. People asking him, people talking about his concerts. In fact, people saying that on Facebook, they posted photos from a recent – posted four photos on Facebook in the album Candlelight Concert for Epilepsy Awareness with Francis Dunnery. Mm-hmm. Francis Dunnery played to a full house in Pennington tonight. That was 8 days ago. Full house mm-hmm. in Pennington. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess somewhere
and probably full house is literal.
Thanks again to Francis and all those who came out. And here's I'm jumping on Facebook to see these pictures of this concert the other night. Mm-hmm. And here we go. There we go. There he is. He's literally standing. Holy crap. I'm going to send this to you right now. Holy crap. You are going to enjoy this. He's literally standing. Let's see if I can chat with you here. How do you start a chat with you? I hate Skype, man. Skype... terrible new. How do you even just send a?
I just sent you something. Did that pop up?
There we go. Yeah, there's the window. Here you go. I'm sending you this link. Take a look at this on Facebook. Tell me.
Oh,
what
I'm not on Facebook. But yeah,
no, you don't have to be on Facebook. Just
right.
Look.
This is exactly what I imagined it would be like.
Are you clicking?
This is exactly. Yes. Look, and they've got like 20 people in this person's living room listening to Francis Dunnery on his guitar.
Yeah. Like they're just gathered around him at the fireplace. You know what this reminds me of? Have you ever seen? And he looks like a little bit like Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, he does.
This is amazing. You know, I can't imagine how much he'd charge, but it would be pretty interesting.
We're going to find out before you and I talk again. We're going to find out.
And. You know, it reminds me of, have you seen the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Alanis Morissette, they hire, Larry David hires Alanis Morissette to come to the house, and she plays, like, an acoustic set like this, but, of course, Larry manages to ruin it somehow.
Right.
Like, she's playing, like, one of her famous songs, you know, I Ought to Know, or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and all the women are sort of weeping, you know, because it's, like, a woman's anthem, and, like, Larry sort of stumbles in and screws it up. It's a very mm-hmm. funny episode you can watch on HBO Go on your iPad. But anyway, yeah, you will find this out because I'm curious to know what the heck is going on with him and how much he charges, because you and I need to get in on that.
Right, absolutely. Oh, and your place in the Poconos is the best place. It's too bad that's like your personal residence. This would be the best Grizzly meetup ever.
Right. Well, we could do it at like a local. We could do it at like the local coffee shop. I'll talk to the folks down at the Cocoon Coffee Shop here. The one of the
right.
best coffee
shops. Oh, I had a great kiwi cucumber face scrub there once.
What did you have there? You had something delicious. What was it? I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember.
Dunnery. I'm following Dunnery.
Me too. Yeah, I just jumped on that right away.
I'm following him on Twitter. I don't know if you are as well.
It does. It always amazes me, by the way. You know what I mean? Like, Francis Dunnery had mainstream radio play with a single of his, and yet he's followed by 1/30th of the number of people that follow you.
Right. Right. You know? Had a huge hit single, and I have 60,000 followers on Twitter.
Right. Like, I always think – I just started following John Parr. I know you and I were kind of texting about this or whatever.
Right.
John Parr, who had one of my very, very favorite 80s hits, Man in Motion, St. Elmo's Fire by John Parr. I think less people are following him than Francis Dunnery. And John Parr still tours. He tours like a maniac. And I was just like, wow. Like, and I just kind of looked at my numbers. I think I have like 6 times the number of followers that John Parr – Man in Motion, St. Elmo's Fire, John Parr. He also had a follow-up hit with Naughty Naughty, which wasn't all that good in my opinion. That boggles my mind. Don't get me wrong. Like, to an extent, I have a real appreciation for your vast popularity. And that's true, because Clayton has worked all over the United States. He's also seen internationally, but he's worked all over the United States in television for years and years and years, whether it was when you were on the Daily Buzz in Florida or, you know, when things moved to Ohio, your time behind the scenes, you know, working in L.A. or whatever, to now. I mean, this is really like the zenith of your career, right? You're on the Fox National. Like, it's not – this isn't like Fox in Philly. We got a thing up our butt about a poncho joke. Like, this is national.
Right.
Okay. You're seen by millions and millions of people. And I have like a – but you aren't that guy to me. Like, to me, you're not Fox and Friends Clayton. You know what I mean? Like, you're a guy that lives catacorner from me, Clayton.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, the idea that like 1/40th of the people that follow you follow Francis Dunnery, or like 1/50th follow John Parr, St. Elmo's Fire John Parr, like, that still boggles my mind to this day.
It is crazy, although I think there's a generational divide, too. Some of these folks, yes, you know, sort of get on a little bit older. And like, I look at, like, Aaron Andrews, you know, the ESPN sideline reporter who was caught, like, this past – or 2 years ago, like, some jackass at a hotel, like, did, like, a reverse peephole thing and, like, mm-hmm. filmed her getting undressed. Remember the whole lawsuit and the whole thing? I don't know if you remember.
Sure.
That.
Yes, of course. The guy is about to be released from jail.
Is he?
The guy who did that.
I didn't know that. Oh, that's right, because you talked about it on the trending show this week. That's right.
That's how I learn everything.
Yeah. I know. You are much more informed now that you've been doing the trending show.
That's been the best career move I've made in a while.
I know. It's like you get paid and you get informed. So anyway, she's actually going to Fox Sports. She just announced that she's leaving ESPN after 8 years and coming to Fox Sports. She's going to be doing NFL stuff for Fox NFL this fall and MLB and other things. And anyway, and she tweeted about it. And I said, hey, welcome to the family. You know, I tweeted her last night on Twitter. I said, hey, at Aaron Andrews, welcome to the family. She wrote me back. She said, hey, thanks so much. Looking forward to it. And I'm like, here's this Matt. Like, she's working for the same company, and yet she has like 1.5 million Twitter followers.
Hmm.
And yet she's working for the same company, you know, but she's a, you know, beautiful blonde woman and I'm not. And so there's the, you know, maybe there's the difference that I've got like, you know, nearly 60,000 Twitter followers and she's got 1.5 million. And I have to think a lot of that is probably, what's the word? Cruft? Is that the right word? Where you just get like a lot of cruft, like garbage, you know, like,
oh, I don't know that word.
Well, you know, I've heard people describe it like, you know, it's like the sort of the cruft you get around, like the filling on something when you're trying to get a tight seal. You got to clean that stuff out, right? So I've got some great Twitter followers. You know, they're very engaged. I don't have a lot of, hopefully, I don't have like a lot of spam bots. I don't have just a lot of people just following for no reason who aren't really following, you know. So I'm sure the people that like John Parr have following him, they really want to follow John Parr. You know what I mean? They're not just following a beautiful mm-hmm. blonde woman from ESPN and they're not really ever going to. They're just going to be like, hey, we want to see more legs next time on during the game. You know, they're mm-hmm. actually like, hey, John, where are you playing? Just the same kind of people that would follow like a food truck in Manhattan, right? There's like mm-hmm. these great food trucks in San Francisco. Like you want to get like great Japanese curry, or there's you know, great Mexican food, and they're like the food trucks that sort of pop up in your location. And if you're following them on Twitter, you'll know like where they're going to be. So during your lunch hour, you can check and see if your favorite like food truck is like nearby. You can run down, grab some tacos or something. And you really want to follow them for a reason, right? You're following them because you really love their tacos, right? And so you're going to follow them. So the people that are following Mike Quackenbush, they're really following you because they care about what shows you're doing, what events you have upcoming, what you're listening to, what podcasts you're up to, the conversations you're going to have. Maybe they can learn some behind-the-scenes stuff about wrestling. You can fill them in on this and that. So I think these people like that are following like John Parr, they're following Francis Dunnery, are probably really interested in them. They're not just like randomly following as spam bots. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think that's
a very valid point, yes.
So I don't know that numbers necessarily matter. I think it's the value of the number, you know, the quality over quantity as it relates. So let's pause here and thank – why don't you tell us about our next show sponsor, and then I think we're getting a little long in the tooth.
I think we are. Thank you. Thank goodness. Thank goodness you got that in.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you did that. I will. I want to tell you very quickly about Cobra. They're another long-standing show sponsor of ours here, and it's thanks to them that we get to deliver this program to you free week in and week out. So spend a moment, won't you please, and go over and check out our friends at Cobra.com. They are makers of all kinds of terrific electronic items. Whether you are a professional driver out there, right, maybe you're a truck driver, you're out there all the time on the road, a casual commuter, or a pro road tripper like yours truly, chances are you're going to find something over at Cobra.com that is just for you. They do all kinds of professional-grade GPS navigation. Of course, they do CB radios. They do marine navigation and electronics as well. They're the makers of the Cobra iRadar system, which both Clayton and I use when we travel. It makes you a safer and more alert driver, which is not just to your benefit, but to the benefit of anyone who ever rides with you and motorists on the road around you as well, because it makes you constantly aware with real-time updates about driving hazard information. And this pulls right from the Aura driving hazard database, which gets verified and then re-verified twice a day to make sure you are getting the most up-to-date driving information out there. It's a great road trip companion, I can tell you that firsthand, and it's certainly one of those devices that once you start using it, you think to yourself, how did I ever do without it? Another item that they make is the Cobra Tag System. It's a two-way locator that pairs through Bluetooth with your smartphone. It doesn't use Bluetooth. I'm thinking of the iRadar, Clayton. But it does pair with your smartphone so that your phone can work to locate whatever item you protect with the Cobra tag. That could be your keys. That could be your laptop bag. That could be anything you want to protect. So that if you have a habit of misplacing something, thanks to the Cobra tag, it'll never be lost again. This and an array of other astounding gadgets await you. They've got great demo videos for you to watch over there. And in their specials section on their website, you can find out, and this gets updated all the time. Sometimes they've got buy one, get one free offers going off there. Deep discounts on some of their most popular items are in the specials section, so you want to check that frequently because they really do put some awesome deals up for you in the specials section. Do our friends and sponsors, Cobra.com.
Indeed. So I think I said last week we might want to talk about, or I was going to talk about the newsroom a little bit.
Oh, yes.
And so I don't know. Have you had a chance yet to see? And I know you've been traveling and you've been busy.
Indeed, I have.
I don't know if you had a chance to jump on. I know YouTube put out the first episode of the newsroom for free.
Right. I saw that. I saw some ads actually since you brought it up, and I was like, "Oh, this is that thing he's talking about."
Yeah. So Aaron Sorkin, the writer of it, of course, the executive producer, Jeff Daniels. Playing the lead character.
I like Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, and I'd never seen him in a role like this. I'm used to seeing him, you know, Dumb and Dumber, of course, and other things, but he plays Will McAvoy, who's sort of the older news anchor, and a whole cavalcade of interesting characters. And so, you know, Aaron Sorkin, of course, known for his, like, snappy dialogue, snappy repartee, people finishing each other's sentences in rapid succession. And usually very smart writing, of course. So usually very smart. And this show is no exception, although The New Yorker basically described it as Aaron Sorkin is sort of talking down to his audience in this show, that he's usually writing to an audience that he thinks is intelligent. This, it seems, is not. I disagree. I think he's doing some really interesting things with this show. And the idea is that they're going to remake the Newsnight show anchored by Jeff Daniels, Will McAvoy, and remake it for a smarter era. That is, not be focused on ratings, but literally do the news and do it without a bias at all. No bias. And it's a cable channel. And at first, you know, we were watching it the first episode. I was like, it seemed like it was broadcast, right? Like he was like the Tom Brokaw. Mm-hmm. Half hour at night on the broadcast network, and that was it, right? Prime time, 6:30 to 7 p.m., and you're done. No, he's on a cable channel. He's in prime time. He has an hour show, sort of, you know, like Bill O'Reilly style, I guess. He's doing all sorts of interviews, but he's doing, you know, big stories on, you know, Gulf oil spill and so forth. So I'm going to get, you know, the second episode aired this Sunday night, and we watched it. And you know, I have to say I enjoy it. Like, the, you know, it's coming together. I'm not swept up in it like I was with The West Wing. It'd be impossible. There must be a screw loose. Like if you watch that first episode of The West Wing and you aren't roped in, there's got to be something wrong with you. You know, you're not wired right, because it's just so engrossing. And the big reveal, of course, at the end of the first episode of The West Wing is Martin Sheen coming into these two guys who are having a go at his aide and basically saying, "Get your ass out of my White House." And you're like, that's awesome. You know, like this triumphant moment. It's a fantastic show, you know. Maybe it went off the rails a little bit towards the end, but it was still such a great show. But this show, I'm not terribly into some of the characters, and there's like these relationships. There's one of the, there's a sort of intern who gets promoted to production assistant. She's like a lowly production assistant. She's dating like the lead executive producer. And she wants him to meet her parents. He doesn't yet think that that's necessary. They're only 3 months in, and he doesn't think that that's the time yet. So they're getting in these like newsroom arguments about it, and other people are complaining in their cubicles. They're just sitting there saying, "Hey, you guys are talking about your personal lives again right in front of my cubicle. I don't want to hear it." And Will McAvoy is curmudgeon. You know, he's a curmudgeonly, I don't know. He's tired of the old way of doing things, and he's looking for a new sort of refresh on his show. And this executive producer comes back to work with him now again, and she used to date him, and you're not quite sure of their past relationship, and they have a fiery relationship. He doesn't want her as the head of the show. And who's the guy from Law and Order? Sam, the white-haired guy that plays like the lawyer in Law and Order.
Oh, wow. He's still alive?
Yeah. You know, the white-haired guy who does like the commercials for...
Yeah, he does that insurance...
Right.
You know, like, trust me, old people. It's me, Sam Waterston, or whatever his name is.
Sam Waterston, that's right. I love him.
I thought he passed away. I guess they just wrote him off, Law and Order. Right. Or Law and Order got canceled. To me, when that happened, he died.
Right, yeah.
They killed him.
Law and Order got canceled, Sam Waterston died.
Right.
Weird.
Those two things go hand in hand.
So he plays the... I think he's like the news director. Or he's the vice president of news. So he's like Will McAvoy's boss. And then interestingly, I guess we don't see her until like maybe the third episode, is like Jane Fonda, wink, wink, is playing like the head of the network, a la, you know, Ted Turner of CNN, you know, his former wife, Jane Fonda. So it's sort of a funny turn in that she's the head of the network. So everyone has their agenda and so forth, but he's trying to take the show in an unbiased direction. He is, I think, like a registered Republican. And so you got some of the staff members that are liberal, and so there's this, like, constant clash. And so, you know, I think it's interesting. Aaron Sorkin's trying to walk a non-political line here, and he's trying to have these political arguments play out on the screen, right? He's a liberal, Aaron Sorkin. So he's trying to balance that, I think, so it's not overtly liberal. Which, how many shows – are there any shows that are conservative? I think, like, every show is liberal, has a liberal bent to it. So it's Hollywood, after all. So I think Aaron Sorkin at least is trying here to have a balance between the two worlds, where he has a conservative anchor, he's got like a liberal staff, there's this inherent bickering back and forth about the direction of this particular segment. But I have to say, at the end of the day, I couldn't help but wondering if this is a show about a bygone era.
Mm.
You know, when I look at like those old tapes of like Walter Cronkite, or I look at those old, you know, those old videos of him talking about the moon landing and things, it almost in a way feels like that. It almost, it's as if we're watching a show from like the 70s.
Right.
Like the kind of great classic arguments we used to have about America in a newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I don't know that that's the case.
Right, because you've been in a newsroom and there are never arguments there.
Right. Well, there are plenty of arguments, just not the types of arguments that we're hearing here. They're usually over, like, who forgot to put this tape in? Our anchors were tossing.
My V hold is screwed up. Get the tracking guy in here.
Right, like, why is that graphic look like that and that thing was misspelled? We talked about this. Why is this there? You know, that sort of stuff. It's very, and so some of that makes its way into the show, but very little is like this ideological. And it just seems like it's romanticizing a bygone era where we had like three networks dealing with the Watergate scandal. Right? It seems like this show would be better set during the mid-70s, during Watergate. And the arguments that maybe newsrooms were having at that point on how to cover Watergate. We know this information. We should probably, you know, the Washington Post famously wouldn't publish a story unless it had two verified sources. Boy, those days are gone. You know, people now go with anonymous sources, one source, rumor. You know, so there's very little like enterprise journalism going on anymore. These sort of journalistic standards that occurred back in the day. So I don't know. It feels out of place. It feels out of place, out of time. I just don't know. I work in this business, and it just seems like an odd argument to be having in 2012. That's how it sort of feels to me. It's enjoyable,
and
but
it's intended to be an ongoing show, right?
Right. Yeah. It's not like a miniseries. And you see all of these modern day events unfolding. So they start the main first episode. The pilot episode is about the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. You know, they're in the newsroom and he's trying to remake the show. Half of the staff is like quit and going to like the 10 p.m. hour. And he's furious because he just had this like sort of public blow up at a public speech that he gave. And he said some really things he wish he hadn't probably said publicly. So he made like headlines with that. Half of his staff left. And then suddenly like the Deepwater Horizon thing, you know, happens in the Gulf. And there's like one producer who's like, guys, I just got a news alert here. Something interesting is going on in the Gulf. And that's how sort of the show unfolds, that episode. No other network is covering it. They go like balls to the wall with like full coverage. They've got great inside sources from Halliburton that says like Halliburton failed to cement the well properly. And so they go to air with this like hour special. No other network was covering it. So they're doing sort of modern day stories, which is interesting, right? I think I saw in some previews they're covering like the Tucson shooting of Gabrielle Giffords, the congresswoman. That's like in an upcoming episode. And so, you know, how the network handles that is interesting. I wonder how interesting it is for someone like you. Like, I work in the news business. So I think like 70% of this is accurate, or 80% of it. They did a good job. But like for a person like you, would you care about a newsroom? I almost wonder if it's too inside baseball.
I don't know. I will say this. You know, I watched The Wire, which was a fantastic drama for HBO.
Oh, and one of the finally, I just started watching that. I saw the first episode. You know, it's on HBO Go, so you can watch all the episodes. So I just started watching the first episode, and it was good. It was like 2 hours long, though. I think I fell asleep in like the last 20 minutes, so I need to. But it was entertaining.
It is. It's very slow. It moves at a really methodical pace, but it rewards you. Like, if you stick with it, it really does reward you. And I think it's an outstanding storytelling all around. I think if you stick with it, you'll really, really enjoy it. It is something special. But one of the whole seasons of The Wire, you know, the first season really kind of follows that team that they are. They're trying to set up a wire to bust a drug ring. But one of the seasons is around the newsroom at the Baltimore Sun. Like, that's what it's centered around. And that was fascinating to me. I could have watched a whole series about that. But I don't know. Like you said, like, if it really feels like it's something from a bygone era, I don't know. I don't know if it would hold my attention. But I'd be willing to give it a try.
I mean, there are just some – yeah. I mean, I think it's – I'd give it a B-plus right now. And hopefully it'll find its groove. But there are just some – there were some real big debates between the executive producer, his former sort of girlfriend, and the anchor, where they're in his office yelling at each other, and he doesn't want her as the new EP, and she's saying things like, this is the America that we can deliver the news to the informed electorate. We should do this. This is the duty we – you know, sort of highfalutin sort of arguments that I don't know would necessarily be taking place in a normal newsroom. You know, but it's fascinating, and I think – I'd be interested to see, you know, you watch like the first episode. Tell me what you think, and report back to me, because it's free. The first episode, again, free on YouTube. And if you have the HBO Go or you have HBO, of course you can watch it on demand or on your iPad or iPhone or whatever you have.
It does seem a little far-fetched, like something bad's happened in the Gulf. Like, we know that's not going to happen.
Right. That leaking millions of gallons of oil is not going to happen. We've got that covered.
Get real. Is it science fiction? Like, come on.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's my early assessment of Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom. And, you know, reading on Twitter and seeing a lot of people responding that they really enjoy it. So, you know, and some people saying, they're going to give it more chance. But overwhelming response I've seen from people on Twitter is that they enjoy it and they like it. So be curious to see what you think of that. Hey, Spider-Man coming out this week. Are you going?
I might go out and see it if I've got the time. You know, I have a lot of busy work. Right. But and I've got to get Francis Dunnery booked. But I will say this, like, it's been a really interesting arc for both The Amazing Spider-Man and The Dark Knight Rises. And I know we're getting long in the tooth, Volume 2 here, but when the first stuff for The Amazing Spider-Man came out, I was not interested. I don't like the fact that they're rebooting the series so soon. I don't particularly like the girl that's playing Gwen Stacy. I don't understand why they had to replace Bryce Dallas Howard, other than they're throwing out the bathwater and the baby altogether to reboot this thing. But whatever. Now, here it is, you know, it's release week, and I have to say, I am excited for it. Like, they finally put some stuff out there that's got me intrigued. I feel like this is a Spider-Man that I know, as opposed to, like, some gawky British kid that's being put in an outfit and he's really not well cast. I'm intrigued to see it.
Yeah.
As The Dark Knight Rises, which is still a few weeks away, creeps ever nearer, I feel the same way, because early on, a lot of the stuff I was seeing, I was, wow, not interested in this. And there's probably been, I don't know, if there's been one movie we have talked about more than any other, or movie franchise that we've talked about more than any other here on the program, it's been the Batman movies.
Right.
So the fact that a new one, the end of this Christopher Nolan trilogy is coming, and it really didn't capture my attention, I think really says something about the way they've gone about marketing this thing. But I am, and of course, you know, the odds of us missing that are probably zero. Of course we're going to go see it. But really got to me late in the game. It wasn't like, man, the first whiff of anything Avengers, I gobbled it up. I couldn't wait for more. And I didn't feel that way at all about The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, it is true. The late trailers of The Amazing Spider-Man look great. You know, my wife downloaded this Amazing Spider-Man book for my son on her iPad. Mm-hmm. And it's like a read-to-me book, you know, one of those read-to-me books, I guess. You can either choose to have it read to you, or you can read it yourself. It has all these sort of interactive things you do along as you're reading it. And it's from the movie. So it's got all the photos and imagery from the movie and all the characters. Martin Sheen is in the book and everything. You can interact with the screen. You can play like little spider games throughout the book, and it's really well done. However, as I'm reading it to my son this morning, I'm like, wait a minute, there's all kinds of spoilers in this thing. And I don't know if it's accurate. Like, I don't know if it's accurate to the movie, but it seemed like it was. So I had to stop. Like, I was like gotten like almost like to the first act, through the first act of the film. And I was like, I got to stop this. I'm ruining my experience here. I don't want to get to the lizard. I don't want to get to all this stuff, Dr. Connors. You know, I need to cut it off now. I mean, there's all this stuff with like Flash Thompson at school and everything he was doing to beat up other kids. And I was like, no. But I have to say, the trailers recently have been good of The Amazing Spider-Man. Early on, I was not into him. You know, where you just saw like his feet running across the top of the roof.
Right, sure.
Was, you know, whatever. And then, but the early Dark Knight Rises stuff, it seemed like it was a mistake, right? It seemed like the way they rolled that stuff out was a mistake. The first thing that we saw, I think, from the Dark Knight was like a grainy poster of Bane.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like all we saw. And then it was weird. They kind of did like a voiced over thing with like Jim Gordon talking in a bed.
Right, I remember that one. Yeah, it was like, what?
And it was like no action. It was just like him talking. It was just kind of weird. Of course, hadn't filmed a lot of it yet, so it's understandable. But it was like, really? It seemed like they really dropped the ball in the way they edited these teaser trailers.
I think they've over-relied on their viral marketing as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I read online about, oh, they're doing such great viral marketing for The Dark Knight Rises, and that's well and good. But I still think that type of thing is very niche.
Right, and it probably appeals to the people who are going to go see it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mom, you know, she's not going to notice that there's a Dark Knight Rises Easter egg buried in a Twitter account somewhere.
Really? Are you sure about the Vern Master's more astute than you give her credit for?
It's true. She might find it. She might discover it. but I have to say, lately, even though, like, I think there was a latest Dark Knight Rises trailer just released this week, which I haven't seen yet. I know it's all over like superherohype.com. I haven't watched it yet. Have you seen it? Is it any different than what we've come to expect?
The most recent, I did watch one over the weekend, which is very like, it shows a lot of Catwoman and her in the costume. You know, previous to this, you've seen like a glimpse or two of her in the costume, but most of it's her not in the costume. This one has a lot of her in the costume. And of course, you know, I think it was on superherohype.com that I saw it. Of course, it's drawing a lot of fire because the more of her we're seeing, the less like the really loyal fanboys seem to like it. And that's not to say that you and I aren't the loyal fanboys, but I think Nolan has built up enough, you know, creative capital with us that we'll give him enough rope to hang himself with.
Yeah, as my wife said. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, like, while we're certainly a little nervous about how she's going to be used in the movie, well, it's too, I'm pretty sure it's done. And I'm pretty sure Nolan doesn't listen to this podcast. So it's probably outside our ability to impact the way Catwoman will be portrayed in a movie coming out in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, chances are. Chances are. So anyway, yeah, as my wife said, she said, this is something you and Mike go and see. Because I said, oh, well, are you going to go see it with me? You know, like the... She said, well, yeah, you and Mike are going to go see it first, though. We have our annual our regular tradition of going to see the Batman released on their opening day. So she's like, no, that's something that you and Mike do. She's like, we'll go see it afterwards. I was like, oh, that's nice. So I'll probably see it back to back. I'll probably see it with you, and then the next day I'll probably go see it with her. So cannot wait. So let me know about that because I got to get some advance tickets, which went on sale, I think, like a week ago already. So, and I should say to everyone, go see it in IMAX. Everything I'm reading about it is that, 45 to 50 minutes of the film were shot specifically for IMAX. So this is the biggest film ever. More footage was shot for this film than any film in history. I think only 15 to 20 minutes made it into The Dark Knight. Most of the Joker scenes or city scenes and so forth. So this is an IMAX movie. But do not see it in 3D. It was not shot in 3D. So see it in IMAX. Just see it in regular IMAX. It's my little PSA for you.
All right.
Well, we'll be back next week. And we'll be back, I guess, post-Amazing Spider-Man. So if you and I have a chance to go see it at all, we'll have to report back about that. And also you'll update us about Francis Dunnery, who is Dunnery on Twitter. Follow him.
Get on board. All right, kids. We got to go.
We'll see you.
Bye.